This episode is brought to you by Odmo's Pizza in Cambie. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider. Delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Cambie,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me? Welcome to the Now Hear This, Cambie podcast. Thanks for listening. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there, and a very happy Juneteenth to all. I'm Tyler Frankie, and this is what's happening this week in our community. A suspect was killed in an officer-involved shooting involving Oregon State Police Troopers and Clackamas County Sheriff's Deputies after a lengthy confrontation near the railroad tracks in Milwaukee early Saturday. Deputies said in a press release that the shooting happened after an attempted traffic stop and chase that ended at Southeast Railroad Avenue and Southeast Wood Avenue in Milwaukee. The shooting took place shortly before 1 a.m. Saturday, came after an hours-long confrontation with law enforcement, according to statements from neighboring homeowners. The area was closed for several hours while investigators worked the scene. Pursuant to protocols, the Clackamas Interagency Major Crimes Team is working with the County District Attorney's Office to investigate the shooting. They are expected to release more details in the coming week following an autopsy and further investigation. There have been at least four fatal shootings during pursuits by Clackamas County's sheriff's deputies in the past year, including 44-year-old Jeremiah Lee Wright last June, 26-year-old Nathan Thomas Honeycutt in September, and 32-year-old Wesley Chance in January. And in April, 27-year-old Micaiah Clinton died after trading fire with Marion County deputies, Woodburn police officers, and Oregon State troopers at an Aurora area truck stop. Last September, Clackamas County Sheriff Angela Brandenburg implemented a policy limiting when officers could engage in pursuits after deputies chased an alleged shoplifter and the high-speed pursuit resulted in a fatal hit-and-run involving a third vehicle. Under the new policy, Clackamas County deputies are only supposed to engage in pursuits when they believe a person has committed a felony crime. After a two-year hiatus due to COVID-19, the nonprofit Friends of the Cambie Public Library are thrilled to bring back their popular Great Backyard and Patio Tour this summer. Billed as a community showcase of the greenest thumbs in the garden spot, the Great Backyard and Patio Tour will offer visits to eight outstanding outdoor oases in the Cambie area and give guests the opportunity to ask questions and collect tips from the homeowners. Attendees will be able to see how their neighbors live and play in their backyards and get ideas for their own gardens, patios, and other outdoor spaces. The Friends are immensely grateful for the efforts of event co-sponsor the Cambie Garden Club, a wonderful group of local gardening enthusiasts who were instrumental in helping bring back the revitalized Great Backyard and Patio Tour this year, bigger and better than ever. The Friends also thank the participating homeowners and all the other local organizations and sponsors who have made the event possible. Cambie's Great Backyard and Patio Tour will be from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday, July 9th. Tickets are $15 and may be purchased at the Canby Public Library or Cuts Forest Market. The tickets include the addresses for each home on the tour, with all proceeds going toward free educational and cultural programming at the Canby Public Library. The Great Backyard and Patio Tour is a sister event of the Friends Canby Christmas Tour of Lights, which will return this holiday season after a successful pilot in 2021. The Canby High School trap shooting team took first place in its conference for the 2022 spring season, setting up what looks to be a highly competitive state championship on June 26 in Hillsboro, followed by nationals next month. Brandon Slater was the top performing marksman on the boys' side, finishing second in conference during the regular season, while Canby's Riley Sullivan, Holly Lopez, and Haley McClaherty completed the clean sweep for the girls with a 1-2-3 finish. Head coach Chuck McClaherty spotlighted the other top contributors on this year's squad, including Aiden Greisenhauer, Hunter Robinson, Elijah Rowley, Saxon Montez, Anthony Anderson, Samuel Lopez, Isaac Odell, Tyler Schweitzer, Keegan Hill, Benjamin Berkmeyer, Blake Miller, Logan Robinson, Wyatt Samarin, Max Close, Cash Etzel, Wade Sandberg, Ty Matthews, Caleb Cole, Dylan Fender, Austin Hepler, Caden Magenheimer, and Trevin Slagle. The Cougs were dominant in the spring preseason, besting conference foes Newberg and Mountain View in each of the 5 weeks of competition, and finishing with a season score of 11,833.5. In addition to its many individual and team successes, Canby boasts the title of the largest high school trap shooting team in the state, with 68 shooters this year, about a quarter of them female. Having the largest team in Oregon takes a great team of coaches, scorekeepers, and volunteers to make it run smoothly, McClaherty said. We use all 7 trap fields at Canby Rod and Gun Club each week. Trap is one of the fastest growing high school sports in the state and nation. McClaherty has seen his team's numbers explode in the past couple of years, especially during COVID-19, when the non-contact exclusively outdoor activity was one of the few still able to operate. I think it's growing so fast because athletes and families are having fun. Everyone gets to participate. It's co-ed and adaptive to all skill levels, McClaherty said. And we have great support from the community and the Canby Rod and Gun Club. I wouldn't be surprised to have over 100 students on the team within the next few years. The 13 girls on the team were particularly impressive this season, McClaherty said, sweeping the top 3 spots in the conference. All will be returning next season. McClaherty also thanked local magician Scott Anderson, who put on 2 full-length shows to fundraise for the team last month. The performances at the Canby Fine Arts Center sold more than 900 tickets and raised enough to send almost 60 athletes to the state championships. It's been a very exciting season watching so many athletes shoot great scores and getting better each week, McClaherty said. It was great to be back to a normal season with practice, fundraising events, and seeing kids having fun. The future of the Canby High School trap shooting team is looking great. The Malala High School trap team also impressed this season, winning their A-team conference with a cumulative score of 14,242 across 5 weeks of competition. LeGrand finished second with 13,108.5, and Silverton took third with 13,001. Cougar Country hometown sports coverage is brought to you by Reif & Hunsaker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. For the latest sports news, follow us on Twitter at Cougar Country OR and Instagram at Cougar Country Pod. The Canby Cougar softball team this season enjoyed one of its most successful campaigns in years, and it showed in the season-ending awards as junior Ava Carroll was named first-team All-State and fellow junior McKenna Kraft nabbed second-team honors. Carroll was a force of nature all season, batting an otherworldly .576 with an on-base percentage of .604 and slugging percentage of .913. The junior slugger also led the team with 3 homers and 17 RBIs and 35 runs scored. Ava had an amazing year hitting and making incredible diving catches all season, head coach Ty Kraft said. I'm so happy for Ava that she was recognized by coaches around the state for the great player she is and what she means to our team, both offensively and defensively. Ava absolutely deserved to be a first-team All-Stater. Joining her on the All-State roster was Kenna Kraft, the team's dependable shortstop, who earned second-team All-State and first-team All-Three Rivers League honors. Kraft also has the distinction of being the Cougs' only 3-sport varsity starter for the past 2 years. Kenna was very consistent for us all year, Kraft said. She played solid for us at shortstop, and the coaches around the state recognized her for that. She's also one of our best overall athletes on the field, and we can play her at any position, and she will excel at it. Kraft was second on the team with a .352 batting average and 11 RBIs. No discussion of the Cougars' success in the 2022 season would be complete without remarking on senior pitcher Abigail Loomis, whom Coach Kraft hailed as, quote, our team leader on and off the field. She was named a second-team All-TRL pitcher in one of the toughest pitching leagues in the state, Kraft said. Abigail pitched almost every game all year and did an outstanding job for Canby in her 4 years here. She will be greatly missed next year. Loomis was on the mound for 155 of the Cougs' 173 innings pitched this season, compiling a 15-10 record with 213 strikeouts and an excellent ERA of 1.979. She was also one of the team's best hitters, batting .338 and tying for the team lead with 17 RBIs. Loomis was named the Cougars' co-MVP for the season in a vote by the players, sharing the honor with Carroll, and was also awarded Most Inspirational. Also making first-team All-League was another junior, Natalie Just, who owned the Cougs' second base this season after transferring from Clackamas High School. Just had been a star hurler for the Cavs, pitching every inning of every game last season, but the Cougs needed infielders, and the newcomer excelled in that role as well, starting the season at shortstop before moving to second base following a shoulder injury. Just batted .305 with 15 ribbies. Rounding out the Cougars' All-League selection was junior catcher Ella Kyle, who made the second team despite missing 8 games and numerous practices due to illness. Kyle batted .288 on the year and tied for the team lead with 17 RBIs despite playing in only 18 games to Carroll's and Loomis's 26. Completing the Cougs' core of junior talent was first baseman Brooke Heron and left fielder Bree Marino, both of whom made their biggest marks on defense. Heron broke a finger in her throwing hand and had to sit out the last 3 weeks of the season, further weakening the team's depth as it hurtled toward the playoffs. But Kraft expects her back next season better than ever. Attempting to fill the huge shoes of former All-League first-teamer Allie Mead, who opted to play spring club basketball rather than return to the softball diamond, on third base, sophomore Kaylee Allen impressed her coach, and another welcome surprise was freshman Madison Biggie, who played right and filled in for Kyle behind the dish when needed, later being named the team's selection for Most Improved. The team graduated only 2 other seniors in addition to Loomis, reserve Katrina Hall, who started a few games in right field, and speedster Chloe Mull, whose biggest contributions came in pinch running situations.
Hey, Tyler, we have a furry new friend that I wanted to show you. His name is Frankie with an I-E. Isn't that cute?
Oh, I get it, because you're Frankie with a C-K-E.
Yeah.
That's so clever.
I know.
The only cute thing I see on this video is me, because you're blurry and frozen.
What? No way. I just got a new phone, and it's supposed to have a great camera.
Dude, you can have the best camera in the world, but you still freeze up if your video calls don't have quality internet.
So what should I do? Frankie's playing in the pool, and it's absolutely adorable.
I'm guessing you're using your mobile data for this FaceTime call, right? Just connect to your home Wi-Fi instead. I bet your video comes through just fine. You did just upgrade to DirectLink with Wi-Fi and fast upload speed, so you might as well get the best use out of them.
Oh, yeah, I did. Okay, hang on. There. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I should be on my Wi-Fi now.
Yep.
Can you see Frankie in the pool?
Oh, he looks like he's having a blast. See what fast upload speeds can do? For upload and downloads at the speed of aww, visit www.directlink.coop/internet or give him a call at 503-266-8111.
I'm Roz Mason, running for Oregon Senate District 26. I am committed to funding and supporting our police. I'm a licensed armed security officer in the state of Oregon and an active member of a police chaplain association. In the Mount Hood District, we know our communities require safety provided by the police. Law enforcement officers respond to many types of calls. Across the nation, police departments are adding cutting-edge programs that diversify 911 response, sending specially trained teams to mental health or addiction crises when needed. Security is an essential function of our government. Send me to Salem, and I will work to ensure our communities benefit from the most effective safety responses, which also keep our law enforcement officers safer. Paid for by Mason for Oregon, 21968.
All right, joining us on the Cammy Conversation today, we are so excited to have back on Melinda Buckles. Hi, Melinda.
Hi, how are you?
Melinda does a lot of work in our local community with her husband, Ken, and doing a lot of work with veterans and connecting their stories with young people and with the greater community. But what we're actually here to talk about today is an experience that you had last month. You were one of, I believe, a group of 20. You, of course, are, for folks who don't know, are an accomplished actress and singer, vocalist. And you were invited to be one of 20, I believe, to perform at the Kennedy Center for a debut performance of a new requiem about the African-American experience by an up-and-coming composer, Damian Jeter. And I've seen some of your pictures and I've talked to you about it a little bit. It just seems like it was an incredible experience for you.
Yes, it was. It was a total unexpected, incredible experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about how you found out about it, how you were invited to be part of this.
Okay. I've been singing with Gospel Christmas for over 20 years at the Arlene Snitzer with the Oregon Symphony.
What was that group you said?
We're called the Gospel Christmas. Every year is at the Arlene Snitzer during Christmas time. We sing gospel music that's traditional song, but different from traditional songs, the same words. And the orchestra plays. So at the last rehearsal at Gospel Christmas in 2019, the composer came with another composer, actually. Her name is Catherine Fitzberg. I think it's Fitzberg or something. But anyway, they came and introduced themselves, and he talked about the African-American Requiem that he had written and composed. And he was going to show the world this music that he started in 2016. He was recruiting for African-American singers to sing in his requiem. So at the beginning, I thought, oh, this would be something I could challenge myself with. And then I kind of talked myself out of it. And a friend said, you know what, let's do it together. And I said, okay, she's in her 80s. So I, you know, had a lot of respect for her. She said, okay, we can do this together. And
well, she can do it, I can do it, right?
Yeah, right. If she thinks she can do it, I can do it too. What I did not know about it is it was in Latin. And Latin is something that I did not know. I had not sang in Latin before. And at the audition, they guaranteed that they would teach every single thing in a way that you would know it. So I thought I'd challenge myself and get out of my comfort zone and sing something I had not sung before. And we did one rehearsal and COVID hit. And after COVID, we did one Zoom and that didn't work at all.
Yeah.
So everything was put on hold. We were scheduled for May of 2020 and didn't hear anything else about it. Had the music, was excited to get that from him. And this year in January, I got an email and it says, you know, we're scheduled to do a premiere of an African-American Requiem at the Arlene Snitzer Hall with the symphony. And I was so excited about that. So they said, are you still in? And of course I said the right back, yes, I'm still in. And off we go to rehearsals. And we did the show here at the Arlene Snitzer, his premiere, which was amazing. It was about a 20-minute standing ovation.
Wow.
Unbelievable. They flew in these famous, well-known soloists from different places. They came in and sang, and it was just unbelievable. And so then I got an email to say that we've been asked to come to Washington, D.C. to sing the Requiem at the Kennedy Center. And I said, okay, are you serious?
Yeah. Wait, I think we have a bad connection. Can you say
yeah, did I hear that right? You know, and it's like, we only selected 20 people. We had about, maybe 100 in that choir. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, wait, what? Are you serious? I'm just learning this Latin, you know?
Yeah.
So
wow.
It just, and of course I said, yes. And they made it hard to say no. Number one, they paid for every single thing, literally. I mean, everything was paid for. So it was hard to say no with it. But yeah. I'm so happy I did it. I kind of tried to talk myself out of it, but being married to the husband that I'm married in, he loves new challenges and new things. So he was my main encourager. And he said, if you don't go in and tell him that you're doing it, I'm coming in to tell him you're doing it.
Yeah. You're doing it one way or another. So
right. So I thought I'd say, I'm going to do it.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about the piece? Because for folks that may not be familiar, but may, hey, isn't a Requiem something sad, you know, something they play at funerals and whatnot.
You're right on. This African-American Requiem, it starts off telling about the people who died, or they go for the souls who have died, and you're asking for rest for their souls. And so when I first got into this, I had no idea where I was singing. I just learned the music. And in between the rehearsals, Catherine said, let me tell you a little bit about this piece you're singing. And all of a sudden, I felt my ancestors. I knew their struggles more than I've ever seen it before. And the first song was about rest. It was talking about the rest, and it's kind of an introduction to it. One of the songs that's super, super powerful in here is the national anthem, but it's the way it's sang. It's not anything that you've ever heard. And when it gets to the land of the free, the orchestra is just playing, 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 and all of a sudden it says, the land of the Nothing. You hear nothing. It's just complete silence.
Wow.
And it's so powerful that you can see the faces of the audience at that point, because, and then it goes on to continue. And when it comes back to the land of the free, it doesn't say free at all. It just says the land of the. And then the orchestra starts back up powerful. It's amazing.
Yeah. How long is the Requiem? How long is the performance?
I think the performance probably was about 90 minutes straight.
Wow. That's a lot of singing.
It's a lot of singing. It's a lot of, it's very, very powerful. There's another song that in it that he wrote, and it's called I Can't Breathe.
Yeah.
That's pretty powerful. I don't know if you've heard it or not. I have.
I haven't heard that piece, but I was curious. I didn't realize that this project had been in the works before COVID and before the George Floyd protests and the racial justice movement. I mean, it had roots far beyond that, but the kind of nationwide way that it reached in 2020. That's incredible. So that obviously adds more layers, I feel, to this project and to your performances.
It does. It adds a lot. There's another song I like to talk about. It's called There's a Man Going Round. And that song is unbelievable as well, because it's talking about this man going around taking names. And that, to me, reminds me of when we were taken from Africa and brought over to the America. And then the names that we had in the homeland, they were all of a sudden taken.
Yeah.
And given to that man that's going around taking names. And so we were given their names and lost the we don't know the name, you know.
Yeah.
We lost our names in the midst of all that.
Yeah. Go ahead. No, please go ahead.
Record Air is like I am confused and afraid. Hmm. I mean, the songs, there's a Kumbaya is in it. It's sang a little bit different from the normal Kumbaya, you know, but it's pretty powerful too. There's some fun songs where you can clap, but it's usually after a real powerful song that's...
Yeah, they'll have a little bit of a palate cleanser in there.
Yeah, try to wake you up for a moment, because people can get caught up in it. And yeah. I don't think that's what we wanted to get the message out, that it's a very serious thing. But it's also a hopeful thing, and there's future. Right. There's the last song is definitely a very good uplifting song, and it's called Walk Together Children. It's fun.
Yeah.
And upbeat, you know, so it leaves you with something beautiful.
Yeah.
They also have songs with crying and weeping in it. So it's a pretty powerful piece. And I know that the audience didn't prepare themselves for it, because you don't know what you're going to hear.
Yeah.
It was the very first time that it had ever been sang. And the Kennedy Center that announced it as a world premiere. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't, that premiere was not just here in the United States. It was all over. Yeah. It was also filmed and it was recorded as well.
Yeah, it really feels like the way you're describing it. It's a musical retelling of the African American story and experience.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Now, again, I had no idea that this is what I was getting into. I love music, so in my mind, I'm singing music.
You just heard music, music. Yeah, music. I'm in. Yeah, I'm in, music.
It took on a very surprising, when the show came, when we did the concert at the Arlene Snitzer, I think that was the first time that I felt, I really felt what I was singing. And it was very emotional.
Yeah, Tell me more about that.
Well, just feeling, now I know why. I mean, not now, but thinking back to my childhood and the family I grew up with. Oh, and they talk about lynching. That's the other thing. My grandma, this song, it was based on Ida B. Wells. I don't know if you know who that is, but she gave a speech in 1909 on lynching. This was 1909. And I found out after my grandmother passed away why they never talked about anything. I would ask them questions. They never wanted to talk about it. Her best friend, when they were younger, she had about 6 or 7 kids at that time. The best friend's whole family was lynched in, I think it was in Athens or Monroe, Georgia. And it was unbelievable because they got in the car and drove until they ran out of gas. And that's how they got to Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh my God, Melinda.
In Atlanta, Georgia, but I never, ever, I was an adult when I heard the story. She didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
But she also had certain things that she did that I didn't understand. Why, when she speak with the white person, why are the water fountains colored here and white there? And they didn't want you to ask the questions, just do it. And I had a lot of questions. At that time, Dr. Martin Luther King was still alive. And so there were things that he banned and things going on in the 60s. And, you know, and my family didn't want to talk about it. So, but not talking about it, you'll find out one day, I guess. So this piece meant a lot. The more I learned about him, about Damon Jeter, the more I respected him and his growing up as well. It's amazing.
Yeah, it sounds like this experience was really healing for you personally and helped you feel like you were able to maybe bring, I don't know if closure is a word, or at least another step in that journey of kind of reconciling who you are and obviously, you know, some of the really horrible and painful things that some of your ancestors experienced and never really had that pain acknowledged or justified in any way.
Yes, that's true. It was a lot of healing. Growing up with the family I did, because of what they went through, they were, it was a lot of painful moments for me as a child in the home. But again, it never was talked about, but hearing this and being around Damon and Catherine, having them explain what we're doing, what we're actually singing here, I do understand now, whereas before I didn't really understand all that. I thought for moments as a kid, they didn't like me. I didn't belong in this family. I remember even one time trying to run away, and I never did because that was a really bad move. They gave me something to never think about that again, so I never thought about that again until I got married and left. But I understand, and it was healing, tons of healing. I would do it again if they would call. You never know. But he's so busy, you know. Damon Jeter got the rights to write an opera on loving.
Right.
And also he was just given another opera that he's writing that came up, and I can't really remember the new one because I'm not familiar with that story as well.
Yeah.
But he would be a very busy man.
Yeah. Yeah. These songs, the Requiem, the way that it is, that it's put together and produced, could you just tell me a little more about how you kind of feel that it speaks to you and your story and your family story?
Well, one of the things it does is it talks about, again, my family didn't talk about things. So this is something that I really want to get my whole family together and just share with them my background and what I went through growing up in Atlanta, Georgia. And in so many ways, I felt displaced there. You know, like I was in a, needed to be out in the world and not secluded, because where I grew up, there were, everything was Black. I mean, the businesses, the doctors, the lawyers, the everything, the whole place where I grew up. So I was a very curious kid, and I went outside the box and tried to figure out other things outside the box. I always liked diversity. So I would go and find friends of different diversities than I am. I mean, or cultures than I am, just to confirm who I am. My parents didn't like that too much, but it was who I was. And again, it's almost like this is full circle, because it is healing in this. And the other thing that I was confused about growing up is that when I was 16, I found out my dad was white. Well, I never knew that growing up. I never knew anything about him. And so that alone questioned who I am as a person. And again, seeing this, going back deeper inside of my soul, hearing the words and singing this made it real as who I am.
Yeah. Hey, Tyler, read any good books lately?
Yeah, actually, I'm reading a really good one right now.
Awesome. What's it about?
It's kind of complicated, but there's like these two kids with an absent parent, and then this mysterious stranger shows up with his sinister accomplices, and they just start wreaking havoc in their lives. I think it's like a Faustian metaphor.
Wow, that sounds really dense.
It is.
Interesting, though. Who wrote it?
You know, I think it's like a doctor, starts with like an S or something. Sass, Sos.
Tyler, are you reading The Cat in the Hat?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to. It's taken me like 2 months to get this far.
Okay. Well, hey, whatever your interest or reading level, open the world of all things books at the Book Nook in downtown Canby.
Yeah, guys, this local independently owned and operated store is your one-stop shop for the latest releases and great deals on a huge variety of previously owned books, as well as games, art, and writing supplies and gifts.
They also do book clubs and game nights if you're looking for some fun, healthy activities right here in Canby. And hey, you know, for you, Tyler, they have a really expansive selection of children's books.
Oh, cool. Anyway, check them out on Facebook and Instagram, online at booknookcanby.com, or stop by 294 Northwest 2nd Avenue and let their friendly staff introduce you to your new favorite read. Hey, Frankie, why do you think I'd be interested in children's books?
We'll talk about it later.
Oh, okay.
It's back. That's right. Canby's signature Independence Day celebration, one of the North Willamette Valley's most popular and exciting community events, returns this summer in all of its glory. Sponsored by the City of Canby, the community's beloved annual July 4th blast includes the one-of-a-kind parade through downtown Canby, local street fair featuring dozens of local food vendors and artisans, arcade truck and kids zone, sprawling classic car show, Canby Fire-hosted obstacle course, and live entertainment from both the iconic Waite Park gazebo stage and family-friendly beer garden on 2nd Avenue. Afterward, grab your blankets and camp chairs and head to Waite Park for the incredible community fireworks show by Canby Fire and Western Display Fireworks, starting at dusk at Trost Elementary and Baker Prairie Middle School. This is the community extravaganza 3 years in the making, the one you've all been waiting for, bigger and better than ever. 10 a.m. Monday, July 4th, only in downtown Canby. For
for times, parade route, and other information, or to get involved, visit canbyindependenceday.com. Is it typical for performances of this scale and of this type to kind of, I mean, you had, it seemed like just a few weeks, if that, of rehearsal. I mean, obviously COVID messed things up. You know, the original schedule was pushed back 2 years. But it's kind of fascinating to me as a non-musician to, like, you know, I did in high school, I did theater and stuff, and we would practice for weeks and weeks and weeks. And for you guys to, you know, sort of be, it's what, like over 100 performers, right? Vocalists on the stage of the Kennedy Center. And you know, just feel like you would more want to rehearse for years for something like that and not just a few weeks.
That's right. It was, and then we found out because we did the premiere here in Oregon, we got to the first rehearsal and there's all of these people there and we're staring and I've never seen a black orchestra. I've never seen it. I've just never seen it.
Yeah.
They were moving in ways that, or, you know, we don't move like that. We just play the instrument. They were moving the instruments in a way that all of us, we forgot to come in to sing at a rehearsal the very first time.
Oh, that sounds so fun. Yeah, you do. When you picture like a white orchestra, they're just like only their hands would move, right? Like, exactly. Yeah, they are still and straight. And
they had the chairs moving, the instruments moving, and the cello players, their heads were in sync. With them. Unbelievable.
Great.
I felt at home with all that.
Yeah. Culture. Oh, that's fun. I
found out from one of the members in the other group. She said to me that we have not gone over all this music. I said, you're kidding me. She said, no, we were waiting on you all to come. I said, it's just 20.
Yeah.
So what they did, they mixed all of us up. Normally, you have the sopranos here, the altos there, and the tenors there. They mixed everybody up to learn the music. And I bet we rehearsed on Saturday. And we rehearsed it on Sunday and we did it on Monday night with that group.
What do you mean? 2 days of rehearsal
in Washington, D.C. Yes.
Wow.
That was it. And that was it. Yeah. But I have to give it to the conductors. The conductors, both the one they flew in here and the conductor there, were outstanding. They will make you sing things that you didn't even know you could sing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and I don't want to, please tell me if I'm off base here, but like just how you're talking before and how, you know, how much emotion and how much history and experience goes into this. I wonder if for you and some of the other singers that was helping, you know, that was coming into play and helping kind of bridge maybe some of those where you hadn't maybe rehearsed a ton, but you had the real feeling and the real emotion and the real experience behind some of these words that you can't rehearse, right? You just have to feel that.
You have to feel it. And one of the nights after rehearsal, about 8 of us got together and we were having dinner talking. That was unbelievable. They started sharing their backgrounds and it was no way you would know all this. And the same thing was happening to them.
Yeah.
This helped them move forward from their background. All of us had different experiences, but they were really alike. Yeah. In a way, they were a lot alike. And what this piece did was made us look at it, number one, instead of not looking at the situation. So all of us agreed that we needed to be here And this was our time to face this situation. It was an incredible evening to, I thought I was the only one feeling that. And I thought I was the only one with a story that related to this African-American Requiem, but I wasn't the only one. And when they started opening up, and I mean, opening up with tears, and I mean, it was unbelievable. It was worth the whole trip just to know that other people are feeling this. We're not just coming together singing music. This was an experience. This was a journey we went on with Damon Jeter, and we had no idea. At least I didn't when I signed up. I had no idea that this would go to the Kennedy Center. No idea.
Yeah.
But so grateful and thankful for it.
Yeah. Sounds like a really incredible experience. I'm sure there are a lot of people listening at this point. Like, where can I hear it? Is it out there to where folks can hear the African-American Requiem?
Well, they had it on, is it Oregon Classical?
Okay.
They had it there for quite a while, and then it went off. And I know that they recorded it at the Kennedy Center because we had to stay afterwards to fix some things for the recording.
Okay.
And they filmed it, but we have not gotten information at this point as to how and where. Okay. Now, I have to tell you, this is us.
Okay.
Before they took it off of Oregon Classical, the night they were going to remove it from their website, I recorded it on my phone.
You did. Melinda, you're a pirate.
It is unbelievable. And I sit and I listen to it, and I just cannot believe it. It was amazing.
Yeah.
So I would be willing to share a little bit of that, but I'd have to be ready.
I think you'll have to, just so we could maybe play some snippets here on the podcast so people can hear it.
That would be great.
Okay, let's do that.
Okay, so when and where, how would you like to hear that?
We'll go over that offline here. But okay. Melinda, it's so great to talk to you. Anything else that you'd like to share with listeners about this experience, about just what it was like?
It was amazing. That's all. I mean, and I went alone. I didn't go with the other group. They could get your ticket, or they could give you the money to get the ticket, or they could reimburse you. But I got my ticket alone. So it was unbelievable. Just pulling up, getting a taxi, going to the hotel, seeing everybody there, it was just amazing. And they were there waiting, and it was amazing. The whole experience walking into the Kennedy Center was unbelievable. Seeing all the flags, I never ever thought I would be at the Kennedy Center. Yeah. And seeing all the pictures of all the stars that's ever been there, going downstairs to the they call it the waiting room. But it's a room that you rehearse in, and you just kind of sit there and wait. They have a television there that you can see what's going on the stage. And then into the loft, looking out was unbelievable. The chandeliers, they were so beautiful. And all of the different floors were everything that I thought it would be. Very, very nice. Very, very nice. So it's still, to me, like a dream. I mean, it's over, and I can talk about it, and it feels like a dream that it happened altogether.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. So I'm hoping to get information as to where we can hear this,
definitely. And where
we can see it, because they recorded it. It was recorded.
Yeah, definitely have to get that out there. Sounds like you would just say this was one of the highlights of your life, Melinda.
This was one of the highlights of my life. I thought being in the movie with Cicely Tyson was my highlight.
I know. Yeah, you had all these. You were, awesome. Well, Melinda, thanks. As always, a delight to talk to you. I really appreciate you taking time out for us today.
Thank you for considering me. I appreciate it.
Always.
Thank you.
To vote, to marry, to live free. We raise our fist to represent solidarity, we also stand by taking the knee. Remember, remember freedom's waves. We are here because of our inner strength. We bear the fruits that our ancestors gave. Racial apartheid has lessened our numbers, but we still rise as the hope of the enslaved. It is said, every being dies twice. First, when his escaping soul takes flight. Second, when the last alive forgets his memory. Don't forget, our strength is in our resiliency. So remember.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hair's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.